After a little bit of a delay from technical difficulties, I think we can call this meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. It is Friday, March 21st at about 11:10, and we're so happy to be here in Lanning at the Navajo Trust Fund offices. Thanks so much for hosting us, Tony, and for your team. We really appreciate that, and we appreciate those who are joining online as well. My name is Evan Curtis. I'm the chair of the Navajo Revitalization Fund Board, and we will go ahead and get started with introductions. Let's start with members of the board, and then we'll come back to the room and then go online. So we'll start with you, Commissioner Stubbs.
Okay. Good morning. I'm Sylvia Stubbs, and I'm on the Commission for San Juan County.
All right. And then Commissioner Harvey.
Hey, good morning. That's Commissioner Harvey.
Great. Thanks for being here. And Billy Gray Eyes.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. And do we have Curtis Unito?
I think there's been a typo.
Oh.
Name's Kenny Victor.
Oh.
It's the first chapter president. And that will get the commission
chair. Perfect. Well, thank you for being here. And we'll get that corrected in the minutes. So we're so glad to have you. Thanks for being here. All right. So we definitely have a quorum. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Appreciate that. We'll go ahead and start in the room. 21. We'll go around and introduce
everybody. Administrator for the State of Utah Navajo Trust Fund.
All right. And Mari?
Mari Bergman, Finance Manager for the Trust Fund.
Before we go, Kenny, so we'll.
My name is Carol Childs. I'm from OJTO. I'm with the OJTO Committee, and I'm always a secretary, and we nominated.
Thanks for being here.
Ayla Hatialiagich, I'm a fellow at the governor's office.
I'm Stephanie Holly, and I work for Navajo Utah Commission.
Good morning. I'm Clarence Brockle, Navajo Utah Commission.
Good morning. Wilbur Cavan.
I'm not going to be able to trust my partner.
Good morning, Janice Fitzgerald, budget manager. Good morning, Dorothy Phillips, Education.
Good morning, Carver Black. I'm a budget manager with the Department of Workforce Services and around Navajo Revitalization.
Michael Mose. I work with the Department of Workforce Services and Paul as the program specialist for the Navajo.
And Paul Moberly, program manager, realization.
Thanks. We'll go online, and I apparently need glasses because I cannot quite read the participant list. So, Paul, if you wouldn't mind just reading off the names. And
yeah, see, Deswood Tome?
Yes, speaking.
Great. Thanks for being here. And then,
thank you.
See, Karma Claw. Chapter.
Oh, yeah. This is Dr. Karma Claw. I'm the Aneth chapter president, newly elected. But ani nishlino kitlachini vashachin kia ani nishachedo atlashche nationale. Glad to be here and good to hear everyone's introductions. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, sorry. I'm Jean Harvey. Jennifer Domenici.
Jennifer Domenici. I'm the assistant director in the Department of Workforce Services for the Housing and Community Development Division.
Courtney Yavi.
She's our office staff.
She's up for it.
She doesn't have
it. Oh, great. Okay. then Justin Anderson.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin Anderson. I'm the assigned assistant attorney general for the Navajo Revitalization Board. Thank you.
Veronica Salazar. Hi, I'm Veronica Salazar. I am the contract analyst with Workforce Services.
And it looks like Anna Chapter just jumped on. I'm not sure who's on that call. Okay. Those in the Anna Chapter calling in, can you introduce yourselves?
It's most likely Jennifer Johnson from the family practice.
Okay. Maybe having some audio issues. Right. Everyone?
Yes, everyone that's on the Zoom. Click yes.
All right. Well, welcome everyone, and again, thank you for being here. And especially, I did want to welcome our new staff, Stephanie Johnson, with DWS Finance, and also Justin Anderson, our new attorney. We're glad to have you, and Justin will hear more from you in just a few minutes. So thanks so much for being here. All right. That takes us through our welcome and introductions. Let's move on to item number two of the agenda, the approval of minutes from October 11th, 2024. Hopefully everyone's had a chance to review those. And whenever a board member is ready, I would entertain a motion on those minutes.
I make a motion they were approved January 20th.
All right, we have a motion to approve the minutes. Do I hear a second?
I have a second.
All right, second. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion to the motion? All right, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right, are there any opposed? Hearing none, that appears to be unanimous. The minutes are approved. Thanks so much. Okay, we will now move to agenda item number three. I'm going through the current balances. Paul or Carver, who's going to go through those?
I'll do that today. Right. In the future, that'll be the new financial manager, Stephanie Johnson, who's joining us online. So the Anna Chapter has just over $432,000
already available. Going over the fund report. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll start over, but Aneth has about $432,000 available to allocate to projects. Adenahotso, $103,000. Mexican Water, $315,000. Navajo Mountain, $365,000. Oljedo, about $1.1 million. Red Mesa, $203,000. Tizan Spas, $223,000. There's not currently anything available for non-chapter projects unless decide to allocate some interest, but I don't think there are any non-chapter projects today. And you have interest available to allocate whenever you'd like to, of $207,000.
All right. Are there any questions regarding the balances? Not hearing any. Thanks so much, Carver. Appreciate the report. We move on to item number four, board business. And as I mentioned earlier, we are pleased to have Justin with us, Justin Anderson with the Attorney General's office today, and every year it's required that we go through legal training to learn about our Open and Public Meetings Act, transparency and ethics, and so we're pleased to have Justin here to keep us on track and make sure that we're doing that and make sure that we're doing everything above board and according to the law. So I'll turn the time over to him now to walk us through that, and Justin, thanks again for being here, and we're excited to hear what you have to say.
Hey, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. So I have a PowerPoint for the open public meetings, but I'm going to be going through grammar and ethics. This is real quick. Partly because this is open public meetings, this is a bit more straightforward, easier in that format. Grammar and the ethical stuff is, I would say, straightforward until it's not, which is often. But starting with grandma, there's been two significant changes to the law this past session. The smaller of those two changes is that there are no more attorney's fees if somebody appeals a denial to a district court and wins, unless that person can show that the governmental entity acted in bad faith. The much larger change is that there is no longer going to be a state records committee It's being replaced by an administrative law judge. The hope there is that it will speed up the appeals process, which is beneficial for everybody. But the general principle of grandma is government transparency and how to access those records. Under grandma, all of the records are presumed public unless they fall into one of three categories or classifications, which is if they are private, if they are controlled, or if they are protected. I think it is extremely unlikely that this board would have any controlled records. That is generally health records that would be harmful to the subject of those records. And so I've seen that in other contexts where somebody with like severe schizophrenia is asking for records related to health treatment they would receive from the state. And we're reading some of those therapy notes, you'd look and be like, this can't go out. This is going to harm the person, even though it's about that person. What this committee might have is private records or protected records. Whether things fall into those categories is very request specific. And generally, your gut feeling is a good place to start. If you look at a record and you say, this doesn't feel like the thing that should be in a newspaper for everyone to read, then that's a good time to start exploring whether we actually can classify it in a way that it would not go out. And that's generally what you need to know about grandma. As the board is, you'll get requests, and this is really a case-by-case review. If it's obvious, it'll be obvious. If it's not, then it's going to require some legal involvement and some analysis on how to respond to that request. Ethics is simultaneously very black and white and very gray. As a general rule, no government employee or board member should ever accept any type of gift that is a result of their service in the government. There's some minor exceptions about dollar amounts and lunches under specific contexts. The other large exception is that a gift can be given to a group of employees, but not individual ones. And the group is defined generally as everybody who qualifies under that class. And so what you'll see generally for those is, you know, like the Delta Center will have a law enforcement day. And that's where members of law enforcement can get cheaper tickets or even free entry. That's an acceptable gift because this is not to Officer John Smith. It's to any law enforcement officer. So it applies equally to everybody under a specific classification. The very gray areas that I've seen pop up in my practice generally involve speaking engagements. You know, sometimes organizations will want to pay a government employee to like fly to another state and speak at a seminar. It's very context specific, depends a lot on what it is, how is it being paid for. And so this is, again, I just would strongly encourage if any type of thing pops up that would not be general to an entire class of government employees, please just get legal involved, because the answer will almost always be no, you can't accept it. But there are some exceptions there, and sometimes they're valuable. You know, such as those speaking engagements, that can benefit the public, the state, and the board members. So there's some things that are all well and good. Paul, am I okay just sharing my screen for the Public Meetings Act?
Yeah, you should be.
Okay, I think you have to close out yours first.
Okay.
Awesome. Let's see. Can everybody see this?
Yep, we can see it.
Awesome. Okay, so. Open Public Meetings Act. Oh, here we go. is what it says. It defines how the public gets to access the open meetings. And the general rule is that the public's business be done in public. And this is going to be a lot like grandma's. The presumption is that whatever you're talking about is public, unless it fits into specific exceptions. So it does provide requirements for how public meetings are conducted, who has the authority to make decisions for the public. It requires there to be notice and an open deliberative process, and all the votes have to be taken in public. So the Open Public Meetings Act applies to a public body. And so that is any administrative, advisory, executive, or legislative body of the state, or its political subdivisions. So if it's created by the Constitution, statute, rule, ordinance, or resolution, consists of two or more persons, expends, disperses, or is supported in whole or in part by tax revenue, and is vested with the authority to make decisions regarding the public's business. This board clearly qualifies under that provision. Generally, when it's not subject to open meetings, it's more internal and administrative policy stuff. So you can probably guess, I have some background representing law enforcement agencies. When the directors of a law enforcement agency, or the chief and his deputy chiefs, get together to meet, they are created by statute, rule, or ordinance. They consist of two or more persons, and they even expend, disperse, or support, tax revenue, but they don't have a lot of decision authority regarding the public's business. And that's generally why, you can have department meetings that are not falling under these requirements. So a meeting is the convening of a public body or specified body with a quorum present, including a workshop or an executive session, whether in person or by means of electronics, for the purpose of discussing or receiving comments from the public about or acting upon a matter of which the public body or specific body has jurisdiction or advisory power. So a meeting does not mean a chance gathering or social gathering. So you guys could have a Christmas party, or if all of you went to the grocery store at the same time and happened to meet each other, that does not count. And a quorum is a simple majority of the public body. So a quorum does not include a meeting of two elected officials by themselves when no action, either formal or informal, is taken. This is the one thing that we'll see with public bodies. This is sometimes they'll create subcommittees. That things can be more efficiently discussed before there is a broader public discussion. However, there is, and I can't remember the story I read about this, but there have been instances where it's been found that people have abused the subcommittee decision, and so they'll essentially do all of the discussion in a subcommittee, and then instead of having a substantive discussion in a public meeting, the subcommittee essentially says, well, we've discussed this, this is our recommendation, and then there's a vote. That's going to get real sketchy. To my knowledge, this has not been an issue here. So there is a notice and agenda requirement. The notice has to be at least 24 hours in advance of the meeting, and then must be posted on the top of the public notice website. The agenda has to be posted with the notice and must be reasonably specific, such that an average person would have notices of all topics of the discussion and action planned for the meeting. This is a public body that holds regular meetings that are scheduled in advance over the course of the year, shall give public notice at least once a year of its annual schedule. What records do we have to keep? We have to keep both minutes and recordings. So even though there is an audio recording, the approved written minutes will be the actual official record. The written minutes and the recording of open meetings are both public records, And the public body needs to establish and implement procedures regarding approving those minutes, which has already happened here. So the written minutes have to be, you know, similar to the notice. They have to be fairly specific. So date, time, and place, the names of the members, both present and absent. This is absence of all matters proposed, discussed, or decided, which may include a summary of the public comments, a record by individual member of each vote taken, the name of each person who makes a public comment, and the absence of that comment, any other information that is a record of the proceedings of the meeting that any member requests be entered into the minutes or recording. And public bodies for whom members are elected must record votes in a list format by category for each action taken by a member, including yes votes, no votes, absent members, and their names. So the minutes and the audio have to be posted to the public notice website. The minutes that are pending must be within 30 days after the meeting. And the approved minutes must be posted within 3 business days of the board's approval. The audio recordings or a link to it must be posted within 3 days after 3 business days after the meeting. There we go. So electronic meetings, that's the word, a hybrid one, but we can do phone or electronic means that allow everyone to hear and observe the communications. So the public body must adopt by resolution rules or ordinance governing the use of these meetings and how a quorum will be calculated. The notice of requirements are the same. The public must have an ability to attend or participate, and it may be held. So an anchor location is a physical place where someone can go. Let's assume, whether they do or not, but let's assume a member of the public doesn't have internet or doesn't have a computer. They have the same rights to participate. So generally, there must be an anchor location. However, as we saw with COVID, you can do this without an anchor location if there is a substantial risk to health or safety. But that doesn't require written determination by the chair. And there must be a roll call vote for non-unanimous actions. So electronic messages. So OTMA does not restrict members of the public body from transmitting electronic messages to other members of the public body when it is not in an open meeting. However, so this means that you can text and email each other, but you can't conduct public business. This is not in an open meeting. And that's where, so if you're discussing something you're going to vote on, it has to be 2 people or less to get out of the requirements. Emergency meetings. So this is where the notice requirement changes a bit. So, for example, a broken water line that cannot wait for the next scheduled meeting, you can not comply with the OTMA requirements, but it doesn't require best notice possible. So sometimes this is going to be merely a notice that a meeting will be held. If you can do the notice 4 hours before the meeting, that's when it should be done. It's essentially as soon as you can, with as much detail as you can. And it cannot be held unless there is at least an attempt to notify all members of the public body and the majority of the members of the meeting. So closed meetings, so this is the exception to the general rule that the public business must be done publicly. So there are a list of reasons for closing an open meeting, and we'll get to those. But generally, there must be a quorum, and it must be done by motion. And 2/3 of the body must approve the closed portion of the meeting. So when it's closed, the presiding member it has to execute a sworn statement as to the purpose of the meeting. And if for any other statutory reason, also must be recorded. And you cannot vote in a closed session of a meeting other than to end that session. So the reasons that you can close a meeting are to discuss character, professional competence or physical or mental health of an individual. That can, they can turn off the recording if the chair signs as an affidavit discussing why later. To discuss collective bargaining, which at least until the referendum gets resolved, that is probably not going to be a discussion for any public body. To discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation, to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of the real property, to discuss the sale of property, to discuss security personnel, devices, or systems, to discuss investigative proceedings regarding allegations of criminal misconduct, and there are a few other exceptions that are related that are specific to the legislature, higher education, and the procurement rules. So what you cannot do at the closed portion is approve an ordinance, resolution, rule, regulation, contract, or appointment, interview a person to fill an elected position, or take final action. So final votes must always be open and on the record. So what happens if we violate OPMA? So generally, a citizen would have to sue the public body, and a court could order that the action taken is void. And additionally, if the court does this order that, there, I would say a likelihood that the court would order costs for the person who brought the lawsuit. So remedies and enforcement, any final action taken, and the complaint is within 90 days. So who can bring that action? Attorney general or county attorneys, any party denied a right. So this board took a vote on something that would have affected somebody, like this is a citizen, they could sue, and the court can order compliance and join the violation. So OPMA does allow for the removal of people from public meetings if they disrupt the meeting to the extent that orderly conduct is seriously compromised. And you'll note the word willfully here, that it is almost certainly a reference to some people having disorders or health issues that might cause disruptions. That's not enough. Similarly, if a child is crying, that's not going to be enough to remove somebody from a meeting. We're doing the annual training right now, and so just some common violations that pop up in these. So closing the meetings without a vote, conducting a closed meeting for non-authorized purposes, taking official or final action in a closed meeting, failing to provide notice, and taking action or voting on items that are not listed. You can tell that the closed portion is generally the biggest area of danger for any public body as it concerns OPMA. So we're almost done. So just a couple parting tips. So remember 24-hour notice. Agenda items need to be specific. No, quote, old business, new business. You cannot take action. So this is what I was referring to earlier. My example was subcommittees. You can't vote on things discussed in a closed meeting. You have to have some discussion about it publicly. Although you don't have to discuss the closed parts of it. So closed meetings only for the allowed purposes. Provide minutes and the time required. Don't text during meetings. That's going to make people think you're having discussions that you shouldn't. Receive the annual training and err on the side of transparency. And of course, if there's any doubt about any part of the compliance here, please speak with me as your legal counsel. And that's all I have for the trainings. Unless there are other questions, I'm happy to discuss those as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Are there any questions from any members regarding your training?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Gray Eyes, I'd like to receive a copy, a hard copy of the presentation. Mr. Anderson?
Yeah.
This is Gray Eyes. What do we do in terms of the Navajo Nation being a separate, having a separate sovereignty.
So the Open Public Meetings Act applies to the Utah State's business.
Who, which law do we go by then? You indicated that going back up to your first slide, a quorum, required quorum for meeting is understood, but you so also included work session to have a quorum. And there's one other session. I didn't record that one anyway. That's the reason why I wanted to a copy of it. The other thing is the posting of notice. Meeting notice. Yours is 24 hours. Navajo Nation is 48 hours. So there's a difference.
So I'm happy to speak to that, and I'll gladly email you a copy of the PowerPoint if you would like, Mr. Gray Eyes. The Utah law would not apply to the Navajo Nation business or really any tribal government because they are separate sovereigns. And that's the same. Utah cannot prescribe anything about how a public business is conducted for other state governments, the federal government, or other countries. And so as far as the Navajo requirements for public notice or what a quorum is or how meetings are open or closed or recorded, they would not be affected by the Open and Public Meetings Act under the Utah state law.
The final question, since these monies that we are talking about under revitalization and also the trust funds, basically, the underlying understanding of my perception is that these monies are already dedicated, according to the federal law, for Navajo people. So, when does those monies become the ownership of the state of Utah?
Well, that's dealt with by federal law and the state law. That's, I think, a question much larger than contemplated in this meeting. But at the moment, the statutory framework requires this board to manage and administer these funds.
Your son is a little bit vibrating, so seems like I can't seem to adjust to your, so I don't know.
Sorry, I can't really do much about the stutter, but I do apologize if there's any difficulty understanding.
Okay. All right, well, there's a question there. Is there another question? Okay. Yeah. Go ahead with the other question.
See, Karma asked, can you review what the legal consequences are for violating OPMA?
Yeah. Let me pull that up real quick. So the legal consequences, there's really two. A court could void whatever action is taken. So for this board, if they vote to fund a project, but there's a violation of the act, so let's say proper notice wasn't given, somebody, like another applicant, could say, well, I wasn't funded, or I got less of the funding because they've funded this one in violation of the Open and Public Meetings Act. So court could look at that and void the action. In other words, the funding would be repealed. It's as if the vote never happened. And the following consequence is a court could order whatever governmental entities, so in this case, the Navajo Revitalization Board, to pay the attorney's fees of whatever party brought the action of the violation. And this is really just those two consequences. And I'm happy to email a copy of this PowerPoint to everybody in the meeting if you'd like. And in fact, I think I can attach it in the chat if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, that'd be great. In fact, if you want to just, yeah, if you could just email that, that'd be fantastic. So I think everyone would be on that email chain. So
perfect. Yeah. I'll,
all right.
Oh, yeah. So I am putting it in the chat, and I'll also so email everybody on the calendar as well.
Okay. Well, appreciate that. I appreciate the good training and the good questions. Were there any other questions on that training? All right. Well, thank you again, Justin. Appreciate you being here and, again, keeping us on track and for the good training. And thanks to our staff for making sure that we're following those statutes as well. So we will now...
Hello, this is Delgi Yanito.
Oh, okay, great.
I would like to provide a question from my LDA, Deswood Tome. He's online because okay. I was late and I was trying to get a link to this meeting here. I would like to have her let him ask a question.
Yeah, go ahead,
Deswood.
Thank you, Delegate Yanito. I just coming into this call, and thank you for inviting me, Mr. Moberly. The distributions of this fund to the Navajo chapters in Utah, how is a distribution arrived? What is there any input from the Navajo leadership on the distribution?
Well, do you want to go ahead and just give a brief explanation on the fund distribution?
Yeah, so in our fall meeting, typically we receive the new allocations from the state, and we have a formula that's been used since the beginning for decades now. That allocates it roughly, there's a population part of that equation, but it allocates that new allocation based on that. And then the board accepts that and also decides at that meeting usually to allocate funding to non-chapter.
Thank you.
And then that's reviewed and approved by the board, so
yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. So we will.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and move on to item number five on the agenda.
I have another question myself.
Oh, go ahead.
I believe Commissioner Willie Gray asked that question. I don't know if it was cleared that the funding that comes from the Navajo. The royalty money, you know, it's Navajo money. And then here you indicated that, you know, like these policies and procedures are coming from state level. How was that incorporated into not really addressing the Navajo sovereignty laws? I just want to know how this policy was structured. Is there anybody that can explain that? Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. Is that specifically with regards to the Open and Public Meetings Act?
Can we have a copy of that too? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Of course. We'll send that to everyone on the call. But yeah, so if the question was specific to the Open and Public Meetings Act, that just that governs the board and the requirements that the board has to follow as far as public meeting notices and actions that the board takes. And Justin, I don't know if there's anything else you would want to clarify on that, but is that what you're looking for specifically, Mr. Unito?
Yeah, because all these fundings are coming from Navajo Nation, so I don't know why the state of Utah has the oversight on all the issues with the fundings and the policy. Thank you.
Yeah. No, great question. We'd be happy to take that offline. If we ever need to have some additional discussion, we'd be happy to do that. But yeah, as far as this is it's a mandated training that we have to do every year with all state boards. And so that's why we're talking about that today and just making sure that we're following state statute as far as that governs the board and the requirements the board needs to meet as far as transparency and the Open and Public Meetings Act. So, yeah, if there are further questions, though, we do need to move on to the next agenda item, but we'd be happy to continue the conversation offline and if we need to. So thanks for the question. Appreciate it. So item number 5, project applications. First, 5A, we're going to look at renewing 11 grants from the Navajo Utah Commission, NF Mexican Water, and Dunahopso chapters. Paul, would you like to give us an overview on those?
Yeah, so it's in the packet. I'm going to try to put up here. Here we go. Everyone could see this real quick. Here's the grants that we are extending. I've reached out to all the respective agencies and with the help of UNTF as well, identify the lead ones we're going to proceed for another 2 years. If there's any specific questions about ones, we can pull up information about those, but generally they all expired in the end of December, and we're just looking to renew and get the projects moving.
So that's on page 15 of the packet. Are there any questions from members of the board on those prior to extending those? Okay. And just a comment, if we look at some of those, some of them have been in the works for quite a number of years, mm-hmm. and there's just one request I would think both for staff and for the funded entities, if we can just make sure that those are making progress, and if not, then let's just make sure that those funds can be reallocated if needed. I have no problem extending those at this time and then keeping them moving forward, but again, let's just make sure we're making progress on those projects and putting this these funds to good use. So, yeah, go ahead, Commissioner.
Chair, I'd like to go ahead and make the motion to approve extending the project funding for Navajo Utah Commission, ANA chapter, Mexican Water chapter, and then a Hotsa chapter.
All right, that motion is in order. We have a motion on the table. Do we have a second?
I make a second.
All right, we have a second. All right, any discussion to the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 All right, were there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, rule that is unanimous. Those grants are extended. All right, moving on to 5B, a new home construction for Laura Mitchell. Paul, if you could kind of walk us through this one, and then also just maybe mention that we may, on this one, entertain a little different motion. So anyway, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. So the project is a request for $55,775.12 for the construction of a 1,232-square-foot, three-bedroom, two-bathroom home for Laura Mitchell. The Utah Navajo Trust Fund is matching $82,762.68 in that project as well. We also received a letter from the president of the NF chapter yesterday, to be tabled or delayed as they work through some administrative paperwork or procedures that they have for this project.
All right. So are there any questions from the board? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, Madam Chapter President, Arna, Dr. Claw is on the line. She can just clarify. That would be great, and I'd be happy to follow suit to her request.
Wonderful. That's a great suggestion. Dr. Clark, are you still online?
Yes, I am. I'm here. Are you able to hear me?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
How questioning. My letter specifically is just stating that we are committed to ensuring transparency, accountability, and proper adherence to the ANETH Housing Assistance Program guidelines. And we are in the process of completing an internal review on this project and another. And we're just asking for some time to look at that and then to assess for corrective actions and improve to prevent from similar issues occurring within our chapter. So today we actually have our special chapter meeting where we're going to give this back to the community based on the findings over the last couple of months. And then based on the response from the community, we'll come back to the board to update the situation.
Yes, sir.
Chair, thank you. President, Madam President, Dr. Claw, will this be for all the ANA chapter proposals that's before the Navajo Utah Commission? Or is it just specifically for the Mitchell housing construction project?
Right now, that I know of, we're working on Mitchell, and then we're working on Chi as well. And then the other day, we were looking at a couple of other items, and we're like, oh, dear, we might have some additional items to review. But at this point, we're focusing specifically on these two projects, because I have dug in deeply into the files and have done, you know, the work to understand that we are in a position having to bring this back to the community. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, based on Madam Chapter President Dr. Claude's request, I respect her request. Therefore, I'd like to motion to table 5B.
Hold on.
Construction for Laura Mitchell.
Hold on.
Okay, do we have a question online?
Yeah, this is Dougie Anito. I believe that, you know, like there has been a resolution and there's all the documentation that's been in place for Ms. Mitchell's house to proceed. And I believe that there's, you know, that the resolution has been passed by the ANA chapter by prior official, and that's been presented to the Utah Navajo Trust Fund, and they approved it, and then the NRF as well. And then it all pertains to approval for a house, and that came forward to you guys, and I don't know why the delay is happening by this new administration. Because I know that past administration, I was there and I seen the approval and there was nothing wrong with it. I don't know why we're tabling this issue here. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment. We have a motion on the table. Do I hear a second on that motion?
Second, Gray Eyes.
Based on the fact that the chapter is a separate entity from the question. So I think we do have to respect the chapter's view.
Okay. So we have
it's only a table.
Sure. Yes, we have a motion and a second. Is there a discussion to the motion? And I was just commenting, I don't know if everyone heard this.
Well,
what this would do is a table would have the effect of potentially holding it so we could review it in an additional meeting, right? This isn't saying no, it's just tabling it for another agenda.
Right. It could be back, brought back to the next agenda.
Right. Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion to those motions?
Was the second from
Mr. We had two at the same time. We'll go ahead and recognize Mr. Gray Eyes second. And then, okay. So hearing no other discussion, All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Opposed.
All right. Let's, okay. So who was opposed?
Yanito.
Okay, Yanito. Okay. Noted. All right. So rule that passes. So again, that will just have the effect of holding that until a future meeting so we can get that. But thanks for your due diligence on this one. We appreciate that. And we'll look forward to continuing to discuss this at a future agenda, a future meeting. With that, we will move on to 5C. This is a project from the Anth chapter as well, home wiring for Ernest Johnson. We'll go ahead. That, Paul?
Yeah. The request is for $5,500 for materials and labor to complete the electrical wiring on the home of Ernest Johnson. And the trust fund has $11,000 in matching on this project.
All right. Any questions on this project? All right. Hearing none,
I'll go ahead and motion. Okay. I have no question.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion to the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That is unanimous. We will move on to 5D, Vexen Water, a new home construction for Valentina Benali. Paul, do you want to look at that?
Okay. So the request is for $66,405 for the construction of a 1,232 square foot, three bedroom, two bathroom home for Valentina Benali. And the trust fund is matching $69,115 on this project.
And that's already been approved, right?
That's been approved, yeah.
All right. Any questions on this one? All right. We have a motion. And do I hear a second?
Second.
And a second. All right, any discussion to the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. Well, that passes. Okay, 5E, Denahotso, home renovation for Nancy Sosi.
Okay, the request is for $50,000 for renovation and reconstruction of her home, which was previously damaged. It's a 24 by 56 home, and they're adding a 10 by 20 stub out, but the home for Nancy Sosi and Andrew So. So we have $11,543 in previous funding, and the trust fund is matching $69,537.
All right. Are there any questions on the project?
I have a question. When I said that you can have a trust fund at 69. Matching funding currently, and I guess they had another matching previously for $4,792. So combined,
that's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve. Do I hear a second?
I have a second.
And we have a second. All right. Any discussion to that motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? All right. Well, that passes. 5F, Navajo Mountain Security Gate Project at Wargod and Beaver Springs. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. So the request is for $5,000 for the installation of a heavy-duty security gate, metal security gate, at the entrance of the Wargod Road and Beaver Springs Road. So at least two different gates be installed there. To prevent people from accessing those lands and above that, those two roads specifically.
Okay, great.
Trust fund has $5,000 also requested on this.
Okay. Are there any questions on this one? All right, we have a motion.
Motion.
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion and a second from Mr. Gray Eyes. Any discussion to the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All right. Any opposed? Hearing none? Well, that passes. All right. And then the final project for today of the Navajo Utah Commission, repurposing 546 for a Montezuma Creek Market Analysis Project. Paul?
So this is from Grant 546.
Okay.
It's a little weird.
Thank you.
Same tax on that. So it's actually repurposing 15,000 from Grant 546, which was housing subdivision planning, to transfer over to Grant 820, the Montezuma Creek Market Analysis Project, to cover a funding gap on that.
All right. Are there any questions about this one? All right. I'd entertain a motion.
Motion.
We have a motion from Commissioner Harvey.
Second.
And a second from Commissioner Stubbs. Any discussion to the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right. I rule that passes. That completes our project applications for today's meeting. Final agenda item is board member issues. We don't have a specific date in mind for our next meeting. We're going to send something out. It will probably be that first week of June, sometime in that time frame, if that works. Some members of the board. Oh, go ahead.
I didn't catch who motioned and who seconded.
Oh, we had the motion from Commissioner Hardy and second Commissioner Steiner. Yep. All right. Well, with that, that concludes our agenda items. I'll entertain one final motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Do we have a second here? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone. And again, thank you so much to our host with the Navajo Trust Fund. Appreciate it. Thank you for everyone for coming.